Welcome to the Principled Podcast, brought to you by LRN. The Principled Podcast brings together the collective wisdom on ethics, business and compliance, transformative stories of leadership, and inspiring workplace culture. Listen in to discover valuable strategies from our community of business leaders and workplace changemakers.
Hello, and welcome back to another episode of LRN's Principled Podcast. My name is Ben DiPietro. I'm the editor of LRN's ENC Pulse newsletter. And with me today is Jim Massey, the Vice President of Sustainability at AstraZeneca. Hey, Jim, how are you?
I'm well and excited to be with you.
I appreciate your time and thank you so much for being here. So let's start by telling our listeners a little bit about your career path and how you came to oversee compliance and sustainability at AstraZeneca. What was your path there?
I always think when I look back at where I started and where I've ended, it was not planned. So I started in the pharmaceutical industry as a sales rep in South Texas. And, you know, over time, I just kept saying yes to new opportunities. And long and the short of it, what I found is that as long as I stuck to my passion, trying to remove those barriers so people could be who they wanted to be in the world, I kept finding new opportunities to expand. So when it started, just helping clinicians understand about our products, to, you know, my role in marketing for many years in consumer marketing, to my roles in compliance, to now helping people understand the biggest threat to us as a race here on the planet is the health of our planet. And that's why sustainability is so critical to companies, and it's why it's such a passion of mine. So the way I got here was just by being open and staying true to what I was interested in. It's helping others be who they need to be.
What were some of the challenges in integrating ethics and compliance with sustainability and social issue awareness, which was one of your main responsibilities? And how did you deal with those and overcome any obstacles that were in the way?
The biggest challenge we face is the concept of what's my role again, right? So many of us in the compliance field got here because we are passionate about making sure we are helping people understand how they do the right thing. And then as the world continues to change, right, we are seeing the need for the right thing being beyond just following a policy. And so the biggest challenge has been taking a group of compliance colleagues, of whom many of us built a career around that function, and now saying we're global sustainability. So how did we overcome it? Well, part of it is, you know, just having a lot of conversations and addressing, you know, kind of where we are and where we're headed and why we're going there. And I'll be the first to tell you, we're still going through that. Like with any change program, we had early adopters. I was one of them. Once I hear it, I get it. Let's go. Others are still, you know, I still just today was having a conversation about, maybe it's us and them, and the idea that there's compliance within sustainability versus all of us are here to make sure our company values get pulled through, regardless of what the topic may be. And so, you know, I think the biggest challenge is the mindset of identity of what we may have in compliance to what it means to be a sustainability individual looking to ensure the environment, society, and the company's governance are all at its peak and meeting the values of the organization at the same time.
So what's changed as a result of bringing those two areas together? And what would you do differently if you had to start over now in terms of melding them together? Anything you learned through that process that you might want to do differently now that you've gone through it?
Before I get to what I'd want to change, I think I want to talk a little bit about like a real positive piece. My colleagues have said sometimes just wearing the compliance hat, it's hard to get at the table or get in the room. But by coming in with sustainability, and we'll talk about it within our industry, the main reason pharmaceutical companies exist is to help with health. And so society needs that piece of what we do. And so by coming in and talking about access to healthcare, those are the activities we do that raise the potential risks, whether it's off-label promotion or anti-bribery, anti-corruption or privacy. And so when we come in and acknowledge our first task is to make sure those who need our medicines have access to them. The real win in integrating ethics into global sustainability was the ability to almost broaden the elbow room at the table, because we're covering so much more than just the small silo of compliance. May I or may I not do X, Y, and Z? That was a really big win, I think.
Are there still times, though, when these two issues need to be separated and handled individually? And if so, when?
It's an interesting question, you know, and I think it's unfair for me to just respond from my own view, right? Because I said earlier, I'm an early adopter. So for me, no way. It makes perfect sense. I can handle it all. I do think that there are times when we do need to come in and be a bit more heavy-handed than just patients need us, therefore we must do it. And so whether it needs to be the compliance edge of me or just, hey, we say we do the right thing as a company value, is it really compliance or is it the right business decision? So it's hard for me to say that we still need to keep it divided, because if every day I'm trying to help people understand how they take our values and make decisions, it doesn't seem I should ever separate them. Now, you know, it'd be interesting if I had some of my colleagues sitting here next to me who weren't on the same adoption curve of the concept. Is that a fair point? You know what I mean?
Sure. Do you find that you get that pushback from them, or?
I do. But one of the things that I was just having a conversation on this morning is, for me, I'm a behavioralist, right? You know, I love studying human behavior. And what I find is the pushback I get mostly comes from the idea that we're changing. Not that it's that we are incapable of doing the activity. It's just, it means I have to work a little differently or put a little more energy into it. So I think that's why when you hear me so, you know, hesitate on the idea that they still need to be separate, it's because I think it's more about our human nature, path of least resistance, you know, confirmation bias. I told you they should be different. I think that's more internal barriers we're putting up instead of actual helping the business make the right decisions at the right time for all stakeholders involved.
So how can ethics and compliance do better to lay the groundwork for positive relationships with these other business units? And are you finding other departments more willing to embrace E&C now than they were in the past?
The one thing that has remained constant is, whether it's my compliance years or my sustainability years, I always must have my listening ears on, right? And as corny and as cheesy as that sounds, I need to always be able to meet my colleagues where they are, understanding what obstacles they face, what barriers they feel are there, for me to position the appropriate why. And more I'm finding when colleagues come and say, you know, hey, Jim, can I do X, Y, Z? They're not actually asking, you know, can we do that? They're actually saying, why would I or why wouldn't I? And so I'm focusing the conversation around why. And when I start engaging people that way, that really starts to shape the relationship. It deepens it. It makes it less transactional and more of a partnership. And I think that's always been what we've been trying to do.
So how can training and messaging be made more effective to get higher levels of buy-in and support from employees, business units, management, and the board?
One of the first things, when you talk about communications, right? I was raised by an English teacher, and I'm married to a journalist, and they both have trained me really well to keep it simple. One of the things, especially in a multinational organization where the majority of the people with whom I interact, English is not their first language. And I'm always fascinated, I always have been fascinated, the word compliance doesn't translate into most languages. Just like when I, you know, easily say, let's work on a speak up culture, or let's do the right thing. These phrases seem simple and easy to a native English speaker in an English speaking country. The problem is, it doesn't always translate easily. And so one of the things that we have really done in our communication effort is to make sure that it's understandable. You know, like when you're in a Word document, you can look to see the readability and at what grade level. And we always try to keep our communications in English in the first language at the fifth grade or lower. And that forces me to not use all my high dollar words, you know, the SDGs, the Sustainability Development Goals, or anti-bribery, anti-corruption. You know, it's easy for me to fall into my language that I'm most comfortable with, but I've always must revert to the more native language of business. And I think that's always the critical part, is when I'm trying to get that seat at the table, I want to sound smart like I'm an expert, but often I can lose my stakeholders. So I keep it short. I keep it simple. I use short sentences. You know, everything I do is easy and translatable at a fifth grade or less English level. And I'm finding that has a huge impact because people grasp it. They're not trying to pretend they're following when I'm using a bunch of jargon.
Do you have to take a different approach when it comes to management and the board?
Normally, if I'm presenting to a senior executive, I get no more than 3 slides. And they don't want a bunch of words. They want it so that they can process it and translate it and get it going. Even in that space, right? If I'm looking at my board or I'm thinking about my senior executive team, they don't need a bunch of fluffy words. They don't use them. You know, it's patients need us. What are we doing for them? It's about cost. It's about, can they get it in their local market? None of that's too fancy, you know? And so the more that I unpack the need, it's more internally trying to impress someone instead of just speaking the simple truth. And so I'm over it, you know? I don't change how I speak or how I simplify, regardless of who I'm interacting with.
Ethics and compliance is one of the leaders in being a champion for diversity and inclusion. You touched on this a little bit in one of your early answers. What's happening at AstraZeneca in those areas? And how is all this being shaped by Me Too and other social activism? And what can organizations do to improve?
Oh, my friend, we have so far to go, and yet we're making ground daily. You know, I think one of the big things that we need to do is I'm trying to challenge that employee activism is a good thing. And so we have a platform within our organization called Workplace. It's Facebook at Work. We are using that for innovation, where we get ideas out there. And so, you know, we're starting our program to get employees to say more. And then we're working with our leaders to help them not only hear, but follow up and take action and make it transparent what action's being taken. So, you know, right now, Me Too is having an impact. The research is showing that more men are hesitant to be mentoring women. That's not the outcome that was hoped with the Me Too program. And so we have got to encourage leaders at all levels and for all marginalized, underrepresented groups to step up. So one of the things we have done is in the past, we used to have kind of our own people strategy. But at AstraZeneca, if you go visit our website on sustainability, you see we put people in ethics and transparency, because it is important that, you know, especially with all the movement around Me Too and the employee activism, it's also happening during the fourth industrial revolution of technology and digital. And so society is wondering, hey, big companies, what are you doing about us? So there's so much that we need to be doing. And we've been talking about how compliance and ethics are partnering with sustainability. We can't forget our other partners in HR, you know, and it's about all of us working together, creating the psychological safety for every voice to be heard and for organizations to learn how to treat every person who walks in that door as an individual. It's one of the most complex topics we face. It's also one of the most critical, because workforce, those individuals who help us do what's expected of us, they now have choices like never before. So inclusion and diversity is a critical one. It's a highlight of what we do in sustainability at AstraZeneca in partnership with our leaders in HR. And everyone must face this, because the war on talent is just going to continue to increase.
What are two or three issues you see as being dominant for ethics and compliance departments in the next 5-10 years?
So if you couldn't tell by my passion, I think people is going to be the biggest one, right? And it's that I'm just now coming to the realization for ethics and compliance, the whole reason we've existed is because of people. When people interact, things can go beautifully or they can go a little bit awkwardly. And so it's no surprise for me as someone who focused on off-label promotion, anti-bribery, anti-corruption, and privacy that now I'm so passionate and talking so often about inclusion and diversity. I think the other piece that's just overtaking all of this is technology on how we communicate, when we communicate, what's being retained, you know, what is the impact we're having.
So we'll get you out of here with this last one. It's our 25th anniversary, so we're asking our guests to tell us what they see for this profession in the next 25 years. Take a look out in your crystal ball and try and project what might be happening then.
I think 25 years from now, individuals who are dealing with ethics are going to be talking about topics that are genuinely there to preserve the human species and the planet. And as heavy as that sounds, we're already hearing it as we start to change the topic from global warming to global heating to global crisis, or looking at the science that says, you know, everything that's been done to advance human health will be eradicated by the health of the planet. So I think we're going to see ethics and compliance professionals continuing to take on more senior leadership roles, because the idea of the business of business is so last century. What we're talking about now is what's the future, and we have to start having these conversations. So by 2025, we will be talking just protecting this planet, but protecting the species beyond Earth. As weird as and exciting as that sounds, that's where I see the next conversation.
That's a good way to end this, and something for people to be thinking about as we go forward. I really appreciate you taking some time to join us today, Jim. Thank you so much.
My pleasure. Take care, and thanks for the discussion.
Sure.
We hope you enjoyed this episode. The Principled Podcast is brought to you by LRN. At LRN, our mission is to inspire principled performance in global organizations by helping them foster winning, ethical cultures rooted in sustainable values. Please visit us at LRN.com to learn more. And if you enjoyed this episode, subscribe to our podcast on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Google Podcasts, or wherever you listen. And don't forget to leave us a review.